Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to the Inside the Boards podcast, the podcast dedicated to helping you learn to think like a question writer so you can study smarter, not harder, and succeed in medical school. And now here's your host, Patrick Beeman.
All right, I'm here with Dr. Ned Palmer, who is a practicing physician and also the co-founder of our sponsor today, Panacea Financial.
Thank you very much, Patrick. Super excited to be here with you. So Panacea Financial actually started when I was a resident. Me and my co-resident, co-founder, Dr. Michael Jerkins, we were poor and frustrated. And through different pathways, we really came to the same conclusion that traditional banks don't understand what it takes to go from med school into residency and then into attendinghood. They look at the amount of medical education debt that we have and regard us negatively. They look at our income and residency and regard us negatively. And all that led to a massive amount of financial stress, a lot of distraction from what we were trying to do, which was training to become doctors, and really was a very negative experience in our lives. And so we got together and really felt that there had to be a better way. That frustration was where Panacea Financial came from. And so from there, several years ago, we're now at a place where we are offering products and services specifically designed and built for med students, residents, fellows, and attendings, and finding that there is a better way and that we don't have to try to force ourselves into the models that the traditional banks have put us into, and that it turns out we can really be here for our community. It's one of the reasons that I'm super excited to be here with you today talking about medical education.
If you'd like to join Panacea on the start of their journey toward making medical students' financial lives better, go sign up for an account today. Panacea Financial is banking for doctors by doctors. And in this case, it's not just a meaningless slogan. Their founders are actually physicians and practicing physicians. So this is really a mission to serve our community. Plus, for real, come on, how cool is it that they're prioritizing medical students? Like, I mean, as a medical student, I often felt like no one prioritized me. No one prioritized my time. Certainly not like my financial well-being. But to me, it goes to show they're looking to build a long-term relationship with their members and not just make a profit. And of course, it helps ITB out when you go to panaceafinancial.com/ITB and sign up for an account. So go do it. Thanks. Panacea Financial, a division of Sona Bank, member FDIC. This is the Inside the Boards podcast, and I'm here today to discuss our health system science series brought to you by the AMA with some help also from Elsevier for providing questions, as well as the NBME for letting us use the sample items from their content line for the health system science exam. All right. So today we're going to look at kind of what we're going to do as far as the series goes. First up, though, I want to introduce Dr. Hamoud. Maya Hamoud is the Senior Advisor for Medical Education Innovation at the American Medical Association. She's the J. Robert Wilson Research Professor, Chief of the Division of Women's Health, Associate Chair for Education, and a Professor of Obstetrics and Gynecology and Learning Health Sciences at the University of Michigan Medical School. I'm sure you do even more than that, but those are the highlights. Those are the things you're most proud of.
Yes, thank you, Patrick.
Well, I guess I will ask that. Besides all the titles we get in general professionally, what are you most proud of in your life? What thing stands out to you, either professionally or otherwise?
Professionally, I will say I'm most proud of, and I don't want you just to think this because we are working on health system science, but my work in that area, I'm very proud of because I feel that this is work where I'm going to actually impact more than just one patient. We're going to impact healthcare delivery overall. And I think this is an area that's very needed to work in. So I'm extremely proud of all the work that I've done with the AMA, whether it's working on the textbook or working on this podcast or working on a national academy where we are actually developing faculty so they learn how to teach health system science.
I will say this too. Dr. Hammoud did an interview with Dr. Bachner on the JAMA Network podcast on improving the residency application and selection process. I listened to that a while ago, and I thought that was very instructive as far as looking at GME and getting in and the fact that we don't have enough spots, all that good stuff. So worth listening to at this point, especially for students. And then I forgot to mention too, you are a former president of the Association of Professors of Gynecology and Obstetrics, right?
Yeah, thank you, Patrick. And actually, it's through that role that I became very interested in the national landscape of residency applications. And we've been doing a lot of work in that space. The podcast that I did with Dr. Bachner is highlighted by career because I never thought I'd get to meet him. And that was really cool.
Yeah, he's a good interview. That's a podcast worth listening to. He also did an interview not too long ago with Dr. Fauci that, you know, it's fascinating. It's got more chops than this little podcast for med students. But yeah, also one more thing, the APGO, I would say at least 8-9 years ago had the best shelf exam prep question bank. So,
oh, Patrick, may I take credit for that? Because it's UWISE you're referring to. And I think a lot of the students know about it. And it's actually something I created for the students. And we still do it. And I chaired that committee until last year. I still participate in it. But it is definitely something that students all get to know as they go through. And it is a product that we're very proud of at APCO because we do help support the students that way.
Absolutely. All right. Check it out. UWISE. All right. So like we do usually, we're going to start here with a practice USMLE question, and this comes from the NBME's sample items for health system science. And I'll just go ahead and read this out here. So we have prior to discharge from the hospital, patients admitted for exacerbations of COPD receive smoking cessation counseling. On discharge, the pharmacist educates and provides patients with written material regarding the use of their medications. Staff are required to ask patients if they have their medications before leaving. Patients also receive a phone call within 72 hours of discharge and a follow-up appointment within 1 week. And here's the interrogative here. Which of the following interventions will have the greatest impact on readmission rates? And so our choices are A, education regarding medication use, B, the follow-up appointment within a week, C, a follow-up phone call within 72 hours, D, providing medications on discharge, or E, smoking cessation counseling. Now, it's probably been a while since you've been PIMP, so I mean, I can ask, but I believe you are one of the authors of these sample items. So,
are you going to tell me the right answer? Because I don't remember this item specifically. But, yeah, let me see if I can figure it out.
That's actually perfect, though, too, because I think students often, you know, think everybody knows the right answer. And sometimes just questions, even for those who write them, you know, you really do have to stop and think because it's a true art as well as a science to constructing these items. But sure, go ahead.
So the way that I work through a question for this one here, I'm probably just going to go through each choice and see if that makes sense or not. So education regarding medication use, when I look at the vignette, it looks like it is something that we often do. So I'm going to go through all of them because it looks to me like all the answers are correct. Like follow up appointment within 1 week, which is what we're planning to do. Follow up phone call within 72 hours. Providing medications on discharge. Smoking cessation counseling. So those are all things that we are doing for the patient and they're all correct. Now the question is asking the greatest impact on readmission rates. And this is where the couple things. One is the student needs to be familiar really what does impact the admission rates and how much impact do each of those interventions have while they're all important. And I'm going to venture here and say D is probably the correct answer, or it is should be the correct answer, because providing the patient's medications on discharge is very important because all the other stuff is education and following up. But providing the medication is actually a tangible thing that we're doing for the patient. It's easy to give a patient a prescription and say, go fill it, but not understand all the barriers that the patient might have whether they can't pay for the medication, whether they don't have someone to go get it for them, whatever it is, that's probably going to have the most effect on the readmission rate because we're actually giving the patient the treatment before they leave beyond the education that we're doing.
Yep. D is correct.
Oh my God. Thank God it's correct.
But I would say this, you know, NBME, people often worry like what percentage of this or that is what I have to remember as far as, you know, the most likely in a differential diagnosis of say abdominal pain or whatever it may be. But the NBME does not straight up ask percentage questions like the incidence or prevalence of this or that is what. Because that's just strict memorization, which is not really what, believe it or not, the test is trying to do. But which of the following interventions will have the greatest impact on readmission rates? Thinking clinically, like you pointed out, of all the choices as far as educating the patient and arranging follow-ups, providing medications, physically handing them to them is independent of the patient's circumstances and means. So that makes sense, but seems obvious. And I think that, you know, that's a good transition. A lot of the third pillar of medical education, health system science, I think a lot of students feel that it is, quote, fluff, you know, the ethics, the, you know, systems-based thinking. And just to mention, our plan with this series is to do 6 episodes and answer the question today in general, what is health system science? And then we'll do an episode on healthcare delivery, economics, and policy. Another one on clinical informatics and technology in healthcare, one on population, public and social determinants of health, safety and teamwork, and finally, leadership and systems. So that's kind of the plan, but people listening to that, probably the first question they have is, number one, what is health system science? And number two, why should I care? Is this like a test I'm going to have to worry about?
Patrick, thank you for asking this. And if you don't mind, I'm going to indulge you with a small story. 5 years ago, I did not know what health system science was. And my father got sick and he was in the hospital many, many times. And there was a lot of things in the system that me as a physician in the hospital that I work at, I was watching and I'm like, I can't believe this is how we provide care. And I had a conversation with my brother who runs a company. He's like, we would never run any business like this. How do you run healthcare like this? And then I had my own health issue that I also had to deal with. And I will say that I was treated as a VIP because I was in my own hospital. And I also remember all the anxiety and everything that I went through. And then emerging out of those two experiences, I was thinking, why doesn't every patient get the care that I received? It was VIP, but also it was full of anxiety and not understanding the instructions and a lot of, and I'm an educated physician.
Yes, I've had the same experience. I had an ortho kind of issue that I got from overtraining. And I remember going to some of these appointments and leaving being like, wait, what was I supposed to do? What are my next steps? And I'm like, man, that's embarrassing. I'm a bad patient. But
I mean, I'm telling you, I never forget the surgeon yelling at me for not understanding the instructions on how many CCs I need to be monitoring. And I just didn't understand. So, and I'm just thinking about all of these other patients and everybody, what they do. And I actually, my dad passed and I vowed that I'm going to do something to make a difference. And as you know, I've always worked in medical student education. I've always feel like I've been making a difference in what I do. And we just talked about the UIs, but this felt like it was taking it to a whole new level. And I also realized that there are a lot of things about the system that I don't understand as a physician that I never learned. And that's when I decided to go back and get my MBA. I was like, I'm going to understand the business of medicine and what efficiency is and all those things that people talk about. And I got my MBA and that's when I started working with the AMA in health system science. And when you ask me what I'm most proud of, I am most proud of this because I feel that being able, and you know, I've been working with the AMA to be this driving force behind making sure that our students get exposed to these important domains. People think it's fluff. I find nothing more offensive than when people think it's the orphan items or the fluff. This is the core of what we do. I mean, health system science, if you really look at what health system science is, it is really to have the fundamental understanding of how healthcare is delivered, how healthcare professionals work together to deliver that care, and how the health system can improve patient care and healthcare delivery. So it is the building blocks for physicians and other healthcare professionals, not just physician, to improve all aspects of patient care and healthcare delivery. So it's not just about me knowing the science behind a disease or understanding the principles. It's really at the end of the day is how do I deliver that care? How do I have patient-centered care to the patient in front of me, but also to the population at large?
Yeah, and I think that this truly differentiates medicine from other pure sciences. And people always refer to medicine as an art. They have since the Hippocratic tradition. And, you know, what differentiates an art from a science in terms of Aristotle's definition? And it's the application of some knowledge. And medicine is not just applied biology. It uses science. It's an art that uses science. And I think that learning the principles that can help you apply that is exactly what learning health system science will do for healthcare, for students. And I mean, there are aspects of this. People probably also know that I love bioethics. That's where I came from. And to me, not fluff either. It's in fact the most fundamental thing about what we do, believe it or not. But there's no standalone test for it until now, right?
Yeah. So one of the things as the AMA has been working with a lot of medical schools, and I don't know how much the students are familiar with the AMA Consortium of Medical Schools, which are 37 medical schools around the country that are doing innovations in many areas, but health system science is definitely one of them. As we're putting those into the curriculum, it's become very clear that health system science is the third pillar of medical education. One of the things that we started to get requests of from the medical schools is, how do I know about what my students are learning? How do I assess where they are in health system science? Because as when they finish medical school and go into residency, and the students are probably familiar with the term system-based practice, really system-based practice is a lot of health system science. And they need to understand, how do I deliver care to patients, not just the knowledge and the content of the science. And one of the things that we did is we initiated that exam. The AMA initiated the exam with the MBME on health system science. So there's a specific subject exam on health system science that many medical schools are using right now. Just like when a student is done with the OB rotation, they have a OB-GYN health exam. There's a health system science exam. But more importantly, Patrick, is, and I think that the students probably starting to see this, is there's a big amount of content of health system science on the USMLE as well. And I know students care a lot about that. Yes. And that content has been increasing over time.
You know, what's fascinating to me is Elsevier published a book that you're one of the editors for. Health System Science is the title. It's a review textbook. And from that intro, I'm just going to read a portion. I just find this so fascinating and true, that technology is changing our world and the practice of medicine at a pace unmatched in human history. Yes, I think we all observe that. Yet, for all the societal advancements and technological marvels over the last century, the way we train and educate new doctors has changed little. So the result is essentially an ever-widening gap between how physicians in the United States are trained and educated and the realities of the modern healthcare environment. Man, that is so true. I mean, just the minutes, even in you know, graduate medical education, I think one of the best examples would be the economics and business side of healthcare that physicians just have no real familiarity with. Like I always use the example, if I work at Taco Bell, I know that, for instance, my paycheck comes from, you know, how many tacos we sell. As a physician, I have no idea where my pay comes from. Like if I do, you know, this many deliveries or this surgery, however many patients, you know, that doesn't necessarily equate to more compensation. How difficult it's crazy to me. It's very confusing.
But Patrick, that's exactly the reason why we need to educate students in health system science, because traditionally it has been everyone else who's not a physician or familiar with the practice of medicine necessarily directly, who's deciding how we do things. And this is, it's been the accountants, it's been the executives. It has not been us. And most physicians say, well, I just want to take care of the patient. I don't care about this other stuff. Well, you should care. There's no time ever more in history with what's happening with COVID right now, even more than ever. It surfaced how important it is for us as physicians to understand all the healthcare delivery aspects. And I can tell you that hospital systems when COVID hit, you can see different hospitals were able to handle it differently. Do you know what the main reason is? It's physicians and people who are part of the health system who understands health system science. Because if I understand health system science, I know I understand supply chain. I understand that I might run out of my PPE. I understand population health. I understand what's going to happen with public health. And I'm able to respond better and plan better. And I actually think that we're going to see a huge uptake even more than it already has in health system science, because hospital systems and physicians are realizing, you know what? I need to understand this, because that's how I'm going to be able, it's going to make a difference to the patients.
Absolutely. One example recently for me, so my clinic where I'm the medical director, you know, our county in particular in Ohio is one of the two highest incidents of COVID right now. And so looking at that, of course, you know, that adds some urgency to implement more preventative measures, because we didn't have a very robust system to do that besides, you know, try to stay 6 feet apart and wear a mask for the patients. And there's like 80 patients who come in every day to dose methadone. And I was looking at this and I'm like, oh man, I have got to do something to decrease foot traffic. And one of the things we're trying is a check-in program where patients will get a text message or be able to text a number and say, hey, I'm here, then wait in their car. And when they're next in the queue, they get notified and then come in. So it decreases the amount of people congregating in the waiting room. And I probably would not have thought of that had I not done a lot with technology and all the stuff that's come about from, frankly, podcasting. But to me, that's really important. That's an aspect of medicine that is somewhat intangible, but necessary. So,
Patrick, that's what I call systems thinking. Is you thought about the whole system. You thought, I have a lot of patients here, and you thought about, how do I apply what I already know into trying to solve the problem?
Well, let's talk about that. What is systems-based thinking?
Well, you know, systems thinking, as you probably saw and when you're reviewing some of the materials for health system science, is we do consider it to be a very important linking domain of all the health system science domains. And the reason that we consider it to be very important is because it's the way that it connects everything together. And really, it's kind of a little difficult to define systems thinking, but if you want to think about it, it's mostly about, it's a philosophy or a mindset or a set of tools that you have in your head that it facilitates your thought process, so you can see how the parts of the systems are related and how one affects another. And the benefits of systems thinking is really higher leverage thinking and action. You just said yourself, if I didn't do the podcast, I wouldn't have thought about doing that. So you're actually going into a higher level of thinking because you're connecting the dots. And systems thinking principles have always been promoted as critical for innovation, problem solving, and collaboration in multiple fields, and including the health professions. And as we think about healthcare, I think we all agree it's very complex, and touching one area of it can affect a lot of other areas. So we have to have that raised awareness that patient and health system issues are complex, and we need to adapt, we need to teach differently, and we need to help our learners really be systems thinkers in the future. And that was what, you know, the question that you asked me at the beginning, yes, is a great example of that, because, you know, the opposite of systems thinking is a linear thinker. So as a linear thinker, I can just say, I'll just give the patient a prescription, I'm done, right? And I don't think about anything else. But a system thinker will think, okay, is this patient going to be able to go get the medication? Do they have the transportation to go? Do they have the money to pay for it? Are they going to the member to go get it? And you're thinking of all these components, and how does that affect their healthcare? And that was a great question, actually. Even if you did not learn that there are studies that show doing this does actually decrease readmission rate, if you're a system thinker, you'll figure that out.
And, you know, I think that it goes to the ethics of our profession, too, because one might think, oh, I've discharged my duty. This person has COPD, so check. I had them get smoking cessation counseling, and I gave them the prescription. Now it's up to them. And that is true. A patient also has responsibilities for their own health, but really we're not trying to get people a medication or treat them for this or that disease necessarily. What we're trying to do is restore health. Like they come to us in a state of, you know, being unwell. And we say, oh, we're physicians. We've got all these standards of professional ethics. We're a, you know, a moral community. And providing just a script on discharge might not necessarily be, in my opinion, consonant with what makes, you know, what you could say is a virtuous physician in the words of my mentor, Dr. Ed Pellegrino.
Absolutely, Patrick. This is why it's very important to keep the patient at the center of all what we do and to be thinking of all the different components that can affect their healthcare outcomes, not just, did I treat this and I gave them the correct medication?
Yep, absolutely. So you actually composed the chapter. You're one of the authors in this health system science book from Elsevier on that chapter regarding systems thinking. So what in composing it was your chief concern to communicate to students? What did you want them to really take away?
You know, it's interesting because when we wanted to, this chapter was not in the first edition as a separate chapter. And we decided that it's so important that it deserved its own separate chapter. And as we were discussing about how do we approach it, one of the things is that oftentimes people say to me, so what did you learn from your MBA? And my answer is always, I learned systems thinking. And it's not they didn't have a systems thinking class, but they taught me the finance, they taught me the accounting, they taught me the operations. And learning all these things together is helping me more think about, and I'll be very honest, before I did, and that's going to sound like, why did I not learn this before? But the patient in front of me, I used to like say, oh, just come back in 2 weeks. And I never really ever thought to ask them where they live or can they come back? And I really like, I'm kind of feel terrible that I practiced for 15 years of my life without thinking about all this, right? And now when I say to the patient, come back in 2 weeks, before I even say that, I say, are you able to come back in 2 weeks? And I try to think about what are some of the barriers that would actually bring them to me. And I think that was a lot of the effect of learning all of this. And when I thought about how can we actually teach systems thinking to medical students without them having to get an MBA? And one of the things, Dr. Jed Gonzalo, who's the primary author on this chapter, he's been teaching systems thinking at his school for a few years. And he used the Water Foundation principles of systems thinking, which is actually was made for elementary school kids. And like it's really for K-12 education. But there are habits of systems thinking that the Waters Foundation developed and they're tools that you could use. And we decided to write the chapter using those tools and actually thinking about how do those tools apply to everything that you do. For example, one of the habits is seek to understand the big picture. And this is exactly what I just gave that example. Is the person in front of me, I say come back in 2 weeks, but did I actually think of the bigger picture? Are they going to be able to come back? What are the barriers? So there are 12 habits of systems thinking, and we wrote the chapter around those habits and talk about each habit and why is it important for us to actually think of this habit and to apply it in our everyday practice.
And some of those 12, like you said, the seeking to understand the big picture, recognizing that the structure of a system generates its behavior, looking at things or changing your perspective can increase understanding. There are many things that go into this, but what I want to ask probably one more question here to cover is it true or could you say simply that focusing on health system science through, you know, initiatives like this textbook that Elsevier published, through your work with the AMA, the NBME's test on this subject, that they're trying to make the, quote, hidden curriculum more obvious or apparent? Because and this hidden curriculum is that sort of like underlying culture of the learning environment that gets ingrained in us and affects the way we practice.
Patrick, thank you for actually asking this, because the way I try to deal with my guilt of for 15 years not asking the patient is I say, you know what, that was probably the hidden curriculum, because how do we learn? If you think about it in medicine, we are observing the people that we're working with, the other physicians, the faculty, we're observing what people do. And I am sure if the people I worked with would ask that patient, are you able to come back in 2 weeks? Do you have transportation? I am sure I would have been asking the same question. And this is what I talk about, the hidden curriculum is how do we act, how do we behave every day affects the learning of not just the medical student, everybody around us, right? So it's by actually doing these behaviors all the time, because it's not just for good for patient care, which it is absolutely, but also we're generating a next cohort of physicians who will be asking those questions, who this becomes a habit of what they do. It's kind of the culture of, yeah, it is more than just that medication, giving that medication to the patient. It's, I really want to understand who they are and how am I going to affect their health outcomes the most? And that is the hidden curriculum. And we're trying to take that hidden curriculum and make it an actual curriculum. So we're all following the same principles and we're all really able to affect patient care.
And you know what? The more I think about this too, I think I would contend that if the upcoming generation of physicians, those listening to this podcast, will take this to heart, it has the potential to address even the burnout epidemic amongst, you know, students and our colleagues. Because if you put the patient first at the center, then you're doing what the art of medicine has proposed to do for thousands of years. And the driving force then of everything that happens in the healthcare encounter, if you will, is based on what's good, what's right. And, you know, if it means that we have to change the way we practice and an OB doesn't see 50 patients in one day, which is insane. Like I don't want to practice that way. I don't want to practice in a way in which, you know, I say, hey, come back in 2 weeks. Then the patient leaves the room. I don't know if they even went to the desk, if they even know, you know, how to make another appointment in 2 weeks. And you just don't have 30 seconds if you're seeing 40, 50 patients in a day. And then it's just constant. It's draining. I see it with my wife, who has tons of notes to write. Apparently, telepsychiatry has really increased the attendance rate of clinics in psychiatry, which it makes sense. If I could call my own psychiatrist on the phone from bed, probably more likely to make that appointment. but yeah, so I would say, you know, it's incumbent on us all to really focus on this, to learn something about it, not just because it'll be included in the test that we take for licensure, but also because it'll make patients' lives better and it will make our lives better and prevent us from losing some of the idealism that brings us all to this profession.
And you know, Patrick, I will add to that everything that you said. And I will add also that I'm an optimistic person. And I do feel that this current group of students are the generation that are going to take us to that next level. And I think you're going to be having a learner, whether a student or a resident, in each of the podcasts that is coming. And that's a great example of how it is the learner with the student or the resident who is driving how we apply health system science in areas that we needed. So they're a lot brighter than we ever been. And they are systems thinkers. And they would like to deliver the best patient care. And I'm really hoping that the future is bright with them, and that when I need them for my healthcare, they're going to be thinking about all the aspects of my healthcare delivery, not just the medication that they need to prescribe for me.
Absolutely. And two, to me, this is an area where medical students can drive the future of healthcare, instead of just giving in and accepting the fact that some hospitals don't let them write notes even, which is 90% of our jobs. And more seems to be taken away from the educational experience, especially the hands-on stuff. Let's start addressing these things and change the culture from within, because that's the only way it's going to happen. And it's on med students. So yeah, that's where it all starts.
Yeah. And Patrick, I want to thank you for doing this. As you know, and I'm sure you believe in it, and that's why you're doing this. I do think health system science is very important. Like you said, it's not just to pass the test or do well on the test. It's really going to affect how we deliver care to patients. And I really hope everyone takes it to heart, because it will make a difference.
Absolutely. Well, Dr. Hamoud, thanks for taking the time. Really appreciate it.
Thanks so much, Patrick. I appreciate you taking the time to do this.
Absolutely.